Thanks everyone for staying till the last session. My name is Ajay Gulati, and today I'll be talking about a new I/O scheduling algorithm for hypervisors. And this work is done in collaboration with Arif Merchant and Peter Warman, and part of the work was done while I was at Rice University. Last month I was visiting VMworld, which is a VMware's industry conference where a lot of our partners and customers, they come and we talk to them. And one of the Australian cloud providers told me that, Ajay, one thing that keeps me awake in the night is storage. And almost 70% of the performance bottlenecks that they see, they turn out to be storage-related performance issues. And in the same line as the previous speaker, if you were to ask me why did we do this work, I think it's because customers need it, and I think it really solves a pain point of the customers. So what's the current state of the art for resource management in hypervisors? As we all know that hypervisor multiplexes various hardware resources between VMs. And some of the resource controls that we have been offering to our customers are the following. For example, we have a control called reservation, which is nothing but a minimum allocation on a resource, which you are always guaranteed to get if you have a demand for that. Second control is limit, which is nothing but an upper bound on the allocation that you are going to get, no matter even if we have to be non-work conserving and even if we have to leave the performance on the floor. Third is the shares, which is the proportional allocation of resources, which basically says that once you have reserved certain amount of resources for different VMs and you have put some upper bounds on their performance, whatever is remaining in the system would get allocated based on a certain weight that each VM has, and the weight is basically represented by shares. Now, these controls have been supported by ESX server since 2003 for CPU and memory, and a lot of our customers have really benefited from using these controls. And one of the reasons I believe that virtualization has been very successful as a technology to drive consolidation in data centers is that people feel comfortable putting 20 VMs on one host and not being able to worry about that one VM performance would really hurt the other VM. And they can really isolate the performance of one VM from another. But this talk is going to be focusing on how about I/O resource allocation? How come we don't have such rich set of controls even for I/O? And let me start with a very simple example here. Here we have 5 VMs, and one of the fifth VM5, which I'm denoting here, is basically carefully provisioned by a system administrator and is given good enough CPU and memory, and it's supposed to get a certain number of transactions. For this case, let's assume it is 450 orders per second. And it's running a DVD store benchmark. Everything is going well and good, but as some other VM kicks in, the performance actually drops by 14%. As we start a few more VMs, the performance drops another 18%. We start another VM, it drops another 10%. Now, I could keep on starting more VMs till that storage admin gets fired, but the point here is that even though he did a good job in CPU and memory provisioning, it actually did not help him in getting the good application performance. And we decided to help him out, and we started shutting off some workloads, and eventually it came back up once other VMs are not pounding onto the storage. So let's see, why is this problem so hard for storage? And in this case, what I'm showing here is that once you have set up these controls, which in case of storage we represent in terms of IOPS, for CPU and memory it's in terms of megahertz and megabytes, you have a minimum reservation that you want to assign to a VM, you have an upper bound on limit, and if it was CPU allocation, it turns out that one can easily compute how much each VM would get because CPU capacity is well known and fixed. And based on these controls, you can compute the VM's allocation, and you only need to recompute at very certain intervals when some VM goes away or the new VM arrives. But in terms of storage, it turns out the overall IOPS on the device, they change so frequently that you have to continuously be recomputing what should be the allocation of the VMs given these three controls that a user has set. So the high-level point to take away is that storage workload characteristics are highly variable. We all know that disks are very stateful devices, and the performance depends on the workload. And as the available throughput changes over time, we need to adjust the allocation dynamically for each of the VMs given these set of controls. Another key impact that hurts a virtualized environment in terms of giving these guarantees is you have distributed storage access, which basically means that multiple hosts are essentially accessing the same storage device, and that makes this even more unpredictable to guarantee a certain number of IOPS and to handle all these controls. Now, before moving on to the mClock algorithm, let me briefly discuss the related work. And there is a lot of fair queuing and reservation control work in the last two decades. There are a bunch of proportional share algorithms where once you assign a certain weight to different applications, they do a great job in terms of allocating proportional amount of resources. Then there are allocations that support latency-sensitive applications, for example, borrowed virtual time and smart, where you can help some of the applications by giving them a certain benefit in terms of improving their latency. Third, there are reservation-based algorithms which are mostly implemented for CPU and memory, but it turns out that the same algorithms cannot be adopted to work for storage. So there are three novel features that we have with mClock. One, it supports all the controls in a single algorithm. Second, it handles the variable and unknown capacity of an underlying device, which you don't know how much to allocate in a predefined manner. Third, it's fairly easy to implement, and since it's on the critical I/O path, we don't want it to be taking too long to compute. So moving on to the description of the algorithm, let me first start with the outline of a typical fair scheduling algorithm. In a typical fair scheduling algorithm, each application is assigned a weight, WI, and then each request is assigned a tag, and the scheduling is done based on the tags. And if the tags are spaced apart by 1 over WI, then one can easily see, and people have shown it analytically, that the service would be allocated in proportion to WI. Here is a very simple example with three VMs, A, B, and C, and their weights are half, one-third, and one-sixth, basically in ratio 3:2:1. Now, the initial tag of the three VMs is going to look like 2, 3, and 6. Now, since we are picking the minimum tag, we'll schedule a request from VM A. Once we schedule this request, the next tag assignment is going to be 4, 3, and 6. And here again, we pick the minimum tag. It's going to be VMB. And if we keep on doing it, you would notice that the allocation is actually in proportion to the weight, which is 3:2:1 to different VMs. Another key point that the algorithms need to handle, because this is fairly simple, you can keep assigning tags, but what if some VM is idle or some application is not doing any requests and then it becomes active? And in most algorithms, they need to do synchronization of an idle application tags with the currently active applications. And the way to do it is they use a notion of global virtual time, which gets updated on every request completion. And when a new VM comes in, they just use the global virtual time to synchronize. Mathematically, the equation looks like for a new request that arrives, you either assign him the tag, which is global virtual time, if that is higher, or you take the previous tag and you space it out by 1 over WI and you assign that tag. And whichever is higher, you take that value. Now, there are many ways of updating GVT. One of the ways that I'm just discussing here is you can use the minimum start tag in the system. This is one of the algorithms that uses that. Now, this does give us proportional allocation, but we want is something more. We want a control on the minimum allocation, which is reservation. Proportional allocation does not guarantee you a minimum allocation, especially for a resource where overall capacity itself can go down arbitrarily. So what are the three key ideas that mClock is based on? First, we use real-time tags instead of virtual-time tags that many of the pre-existing algorithms use. And one of the reasons for using real-time tags or the tags based on wall clock time is that it makes it easier for us to track the reservation and limit controls and see how many requests were done in a certain amount of time. Whereas if you use something like virtual clock, then you lose track of how much of virtual tags were consumed in a certain amount of time. And that becomes another burden that you have to keep track of somehow. Second, since we are providing three controls, we use three different tags. So basically each request, now instead of having a single tag, would have three tags, one for reservation, one for limit, and one for shares. Now, since we have put three tags in the system now, the next obvious challenge is, how do you pick which tag to use for scheduling? Because earlier there was one tag, it was easier to pick the lowest tag. But in case of mClock, we need to dynamically decide based on if the reservation is being met or not, or the limit is not being exceeded or not, which tag to use for scheduling. And the second problem, which I just mentioned, is the problem of synchronization. When a new application becomes active after being idle for some amount of time, we again need to synchronize the tags of that application. So let's look at each of these components in more detail. So as I mentioned, that we assign three real-time tags to each request. And the way we do it is that the request tag is nothing but maximum of the previous reservation tag plus 1 over ri, where ri is the reservation that you have set or the current time. Similarly, the proportional share tag is nothing but maximum of the previous proportional share tag plus 1 over your weight or the current time, and you take max of these two, so that if one VM has been idle for a long time, it would synchronize based on the real time itself, which is the current time, and you don't have to keep this notion of global virtual time. And similarly, the limit tag is nothing but the previous limit tag plus 1 over li and the current virtual tag, and you take max of these two. Now, once we have assigned these tags, how does the scheduling happen? In case of scheduling, we basically have two different phases. One I call as a constraint-based phase. In that phase, what happens is the algorithm essentially says, is there any request in the system whose reservation tag is smaller than the current time? If that is the case, that basically means that somebody needs their reservation to be met, and we pick the smallest reservation tag in the system. And it has to be eligible also, where the definition of eligibility is that any VM is eligible if the limit tag is not exceeding the current time. Basically, if the limit tag is higher than the current time, that essentially shows that you have already consumed your limit of allocation and you should not be scheduled anymore. Now, if the first condition is not true, let's say the reservation tags are all higher than the current time. In that case, we schedule based on the shares tag. And that phase I call as weight-based allocation. If you're in that phase, that basically means that by this time T, the reservations have already been met. Now, since you don't have to worry about reservation, let's just focus on giving proportional shares. And just using the smallest eligible shares tag gives us that property. But we don't want to schedule somebody based on the shares and then make them lose reservation in future. So what we do to avoid that is we subtract 1 over r from the reservation tag of that VM. So basically, in the reservation phase, your reservation tag is progressed, but in the shares phase, your reservation tag is not progressed. Now, revisiting the issue of how do we synchronize an idle VM. So when an application becomes active again after idleness, the shares tag can basically go much higher or lower compared to the current time. And in order to synchronize, we make the smallest share tag equal to the current time by shifting every VM by a certain offset. So the relative ordering is not changed, but the minimum tag comes to the current time and the new VM starts at the same time. So the synchronization is taken care of by putting everybody's shares tag on the current time. Sorry, not everybody's, but the minimum shares tag on the current time. Also, storage has, in an IO scheduler, there are many other storage-specific issues that we need to deal with. One of the common characteristics of IO workloads is bursts. And in order to handle bursts, we basically use a similar technique that previous works have shown, for example, borrowed virtual time and smarts, where we assign the P tags by giving them a certain offset sigma and not starting them at the current time, but by giving them sometime before the current time, which is bounded by sigma over wi. But the key property of doing it in this algorithm is that the reservations are not impacted by changing or giving you benefit in the shares tag. What that means is that we can allow an application to be bursty and we can schedule more requests from that application, but we won't affect the reservation of the other applications. Second issue is how do you handle IO size? Since we are doing it based on the IOPS, it might really benefit the VMs which are doing large size IOs. And we all know that IO cost increases sublinearly with the request size. It's not a linear function. So in the paper, we have a equation where we take the I/O size into account, and we convert one request into a certain number of n requests based on that equation. I won't be going into details of that equation, but I encourage you to look in the paper. Finally, what about the locality of requests? So since we are scheduling VMs, the VMs IOs coming in would have locality as compared to moving on to another VM. And in this case, again, we schedule a bounded bunch of batch of requests from a single VM as long as the logical block address is within a small space. Otherwise, we'll do scheduling purely based on the tags. Also, so far I have described mClock as an algorithm which is running in a single host, and it's trying to give all these flexible controls to the VMs. More and more in virtualization world, people are looking at clustered storage architectures. What this means is that instead of having an expensive storage array sitting behind your cluster of hosts, they are taking advantage of the local storage at the host. For example, there are companies like Left Hand Networks, now at HP, where they take the pool of storage at each of the hosts, combine them to create a single LUN, which is striped over all the hosts, and expose that to the VMs. And now when a VM issues an IO from a host, it would actually go to different hosts and then come back. We adopted our algorithm to run in a, such a clustered environment where the host on which VM is running would forward the traffic, and it only needs to piggyback a very small piece of information, and our algorithm running on each of the individual hosts would make sure that these controls are respected even in this distributed setting. And more details of the exact changes which are required are in the paper, but the changes are fairly small and easy to do. Moving on to the experimental results. So we have implemented this mClock algorithm as in the SCSI stack layer of ESX hypervisor. It took roughly 200 lines of code to implement the scheduler. And we experimented with a bunch of virtual machines running different operating systems, running different workloads. And all the virtual machines, they have their virtual disks, which is nothing but a file on the same data store. So the experiment is you run a bunch of virtual machines on one host. They are all accessing virtual disks, which are on the same data store. And the algorithm is controlling the allocation on that data store. Let's look at the first result where I'm showing the reservation and limit enforcement by mClock. In this case, there are four VMs. They are running diverse workload. Each VM is actually running a different workload here. And the shares are set in ratio 2:2:1:1. And we also set the limit on one of the VMs, which is VM2, to be 700 IOPS. And VM4 has a reservation of 250 IOPS. And what we do is we start with one VM, and then after every 60 seconds, we start another VM. So what happens here is, first I'm showing the result with a pre-existing algorithm like SFQ, which is basically a varied fair queuing algorithm. And we are running a variant of that, which is SFQD, which basically means that it's keeping a certain amount of requests outstanding at the device, which is 32 in our case. So at any time, a host is not doing one IO at a time, it is allowed to keep 32 outstanding IOs. Now in this case, if you notice, when VM1 is running, it's getting roughly 1900 IOPS. When you start VM1 and 2, they're getting roughly half and half. When you start VM1, 2, and 3, the third VM is getting half as compared to 1 and 2. So it's doing a good job in terms of proportional allocation. When you start VM4, it's getting roughly 1/6 of the overall system, and 3 and 4 are getting roughly the same IOPS, and 1 and 2 are getting twice of that. But notice that the controls that we set are not respected here because the algorithm is not even designed to take that as an input. So I'm just showing what's the baseline performance here. Then we run the same thing through mClock. And in this case, you notice that as we start VM2, instead of getting almost 1,000 IOPS, it's getting exactly 700 IOPS, and we don't allocate more than that. One of the reasons I would like to mention that why limit is an interesting control to have. So based on some of the conversations we have had with storage providers and cloud service providers, they want to set the expectations right. One of the common problems storage provider mentioned is this honeymoon period. When they ship their storage box to a customer, first few weeks it works great because they have very few LUNs, they don't have a lot of data on the storage array, and it's seeking only parts of the disk. The cache is not getting contended too much. As the weeks go by, the honeymoon period ends and the performance starts sinking down. And the customers start complaining that you gave such a nice array, but then how come it's not doing so well now? And most of the vendors now, they also provide this limit control. They say that when you do a LUN, once you allocate one LUN, try to set a limit on top of it. And same for cloud service providers, that they would try to put a limit on some of the VM allocations to set the customer expectation right. So in this case, basically, mClock doesn't allow VM2 to have any honeymoon. It's a little cruel, but it has to face the facts on the day one. If you notice, as we put on VM3 and 4, the VM4, instead of getting roughly 180 IOPS, which is the case with SFQ, it actually meets its reservation of 250 IOPS. And that's another thing where we show that using mClock, you are able to meet your lower bound. And you won't get diluted as much as based on your shares if more and more VMs start coming on. Now I'm going to show a result on the burst handling parameter that I described. In this case, recall that an idle VM gets benefit when next there is spare capacity in the system. And there are two VMs here. VM1 happens to be a bursty VM, which is doing roughly 128 IOs every 400 milliseconds, and it's 80% random. VM2 is doing 16 kilobyte reads, 20% random, and doing 32 outstanding IOs. So in this case, if you notice the results when the idle credit is 1, as in we are not doing any specific burst handling, the latency of VM1 is pretty high. It's 49 milliseconds. If you look at the IOPS in that case, it's getting 312, which is what it is exactly demanding. It's roughly asking for 300 IOPS a second, and it's getting roughly that number. Once we increase the burst parameter of to help this VM to 64, the latency drops down to roughly 30.8 milliseconds. And what this shows is that now, because we are scheduling IOs for this VM in a burst, we are able to give it lower latency. If you look at the IOPS numbers here, they are not really impacted by this because the VM is only again asking for roughly 300 IOs and it's able to get those 300 IOPS. What matters is how they are scheduled. Are they scheduled in a scattered way or they are scheduled together? And that's the benefit that the burst handling parameter would give you. Next, we run file bench workloads. In this case, we have two VMs. They are running a file bench OLTP workload. And we put another VM in the background, which is a Windows VM running IOMeter. Again, in this case, we initially start with no Windows VM, and we are showing the results using a mechanism like SFQ, which is a fair scheduling algorithm. And the weights are assigned 2:1:1, and we have set the reservations for the OLTP VMs to be 500 IOPS, but it's not going to be useful because the algorithm doesn't even take that as an input. I'm just stating them for completeness here. Now, as the Windows VM kicks in at 115 milliseconds, we notice that the overall contention on the storage increases, and OLTP workload 2 really starts suffering in terms of both latency and IOPS. We run the same experiment, although notice that the overall allocation in terms of shares is definitely respected. We ran the same system with mClock. And as the Windows VM starts again, roughly around 115 seconds, we notice that it's able to give the reservation to both the OLTP VMs that are running. And it turns out that it cannot, to those VMs whose weights are in ratio 1:2, it's not able to give them 1:2 because it's reservation have higher priority as compared to shares. But even if we look at the application level metrics here, the OLTP2, which was suffering in the first case, sees much better application level transactions per second and milliseconds per transaction. Next, I'll briefly talk about one of the results that we got for the DM clock algorithm. In this case, we have three servers who are combined to provide the storage LAN. And the LAN is striped over three servers. And we ran three client VMs from a single physical box. And the shares are set in ratio 1:4:6. And the clients are accessing servers in a uniform manner. So I'm not doing any hotspotting, as in one client is only going to one of the storage servers. There is another experiment in the paper that talks about a more complicated case. So in this case, first we ran without reservation to show that we can actually do shares in a distributed setting. So if you notice on the left-hand side plot that the VMs are getting service in ratio 1:4:6. It's roughly 500, 2,000, and 3,000. And this is happening in a distributed setting. And the storage is being accessed from the clients from three different storage servers. And all of them are running mClock. It's just we are sending this extra bit of information for them to know how much allocation a client is getting at other places in the system so that they can really meet these controls. Next, in the same setting, we set the reservations to be 800, 1,000, and 1,000. Now, I wanted to focus on the client one. Client one, just based on the shares, was getting 500 IOPS, which is what was expected in the beginning. Now, as soon as we set the reservation, it's getting 800, which is the reservation that we have set to. So if you set a higher reservation, which means that your reservation allocation is bigger than what you would get based on the shares, the reservations are always met. And for each of the allocations, I'm actually showing in two different colors how many requests were done in the constraint phase versus the wait phase. And you can see exactly the number of reservation requests are done in the constraint phase. The remaining requests are done in the wait phase. Now to conclude, I hope that I have convince you about the complication and the benefit of storage IO allocation problem and why it's a hard problem to solve. And we show that mClock supports these flexible controls of reservations, limits, and shares in one place. It can handle the variable IO performance seen by the hypervisor. And we believe that it can be used for other resources as well. We have shown the application for storage, but same algorithm can be applied for CPU and networking allocation. Some of the future work, some of the things that we are looking at is one, how to do a better estimation of overall capacity that we can reserve on a particular storage device. Second, how to add another control, which is priority control, where if the reservations cannot be met, can we go in some order of priority? And finally, I think as a community, I feel there is a much bigger research problem which would really benefit the customers out there is, can we abstract out such controls so that a system admin doesn't have to go in and say, what should I set as reservation limit and shares here, but can I just specify that I don't want latency more than 15 milliseconds, please set the underlying controls and give me that high-level abstraction. Thank you. I'll be happy to take questions now.
Hi, AJ. It's Etienne from UNSW and Nectar. It's nice to see some more knobs, but it's also nice to see that you'd like to sort of make it easier for the system admins as well. I have a question about slide 16. Do you mind just popping back?
Yeah. Yes.
So when you're using SFQ,
yeah,
and you've got two VMs going,
mm-hmm,
the total number of IOPS that I see there is more than in the case with mClock where you've got two VMs going and the limit set on VM2. It's like roughly 300 IOPS difference. Is that overhead or is there somewhere where those IOPS are going?
So as you start more and more VMs, the storage capacity is not a constant function. It depends a lot on how your workload is placed on the storage device, what kind of IOs you are doing, how much cache hits you are getting, and some amount of variance as you power on more VMs is actually expected.
That's quite a lot of variance though, right?
It's roughly 2,000 and 2,200.
Yeah, so I guess it's reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's hard to exactly pinpoint without knowing all the details of the underlying storage device, because what a host sees is a LAN, and it basically tries to place blocks on that LAN. And so it's very hard to figure out the exact layout of the LAN blocks onto the underlying disks.
I guess the issue that I'm raising is repetitiveness of benchmarks, right? When you run them multiple times, you're obviously not getting the same layout on the LAN, and that's affecting your performance quite significantly.
Actually, one thing I should mention here is that if you look at the workloads of these VMs in the paper, the VMs are not doing exactly the same workload.
Right.
So if you put VM2 and it turns out that VM2 is doing easier workload for the storage array, which is less random, then the overall IOPS is expected to go up. And I think in this case, the VMs are doing somewhere between 20% random IOs to 80% random IOs.
But when you're comparing two techniques, you really want to compare apples to apples, right? So
let me see if I have that value here and we can... Okay, so these are the values for these four VMs. And you can see here that the VM1 happens to be 100% random, and VM2 is 80% random.
Okay.
And also VM2 is read intensive as compared to VM1. So since it is doing fewer writes, that also can lead to a difference in performance.
Right, and so in time, these sort of allocations between different types of workloads vary randomly between the two VMs.
True.
Okay.
So I really liked the idea of exposing latency versus throughput trade-off to system administrators. I was wondering if you'd comment about how you sort of made that trade-off in this work, or is it something that you have a knob that you can turn, or how does that work?
So in this work, we are focusing on that if a particular host is getting a certain amount of throughput, how do you divvy that up among different VMs? Now, there was actually another work that we did 2 years ago where we actually figured out how much IOs overall we should keep outstanding on a particular device to control the latency of that device. And we had a paper in FAST 2009 in which we talk about what should be the overall outstanding request or IOs in order to keep the latency under a certain value. And I think overall I feel that in order to really do a good job at giving some latency level guarantees, we need some support from the underlying array vendor as well. Because if they expose a device to us and say, you can build your controls on this device, but the overall performance of that device can fluctuate widely, it's very hard for us to build something very nice on top. And I think in the long run, it would be very useful if you could get devices from the array that says, this device would give you 2,000 IOPS within 20 millisecond latency. And then we can build much nicer control and expose them to the users on top of such devices.
I guess as a follow-up, so one thing I'm worried about is if you have, say, one VM that's doing a bunch of sequential IO and some other ones that are doing random, if you multiplex it like a granularity of a second, you'll have great throughput because you'll get lots of sequential I.O. If you multiplex, you know, every millisecond, you'll completely waste that sequential throughput. So can you comment on sort of figuring out how often to switch back and forth?
That's a great question. So I would answer it in two parts. One, we don't do one I.O. at a time onto the LAN. So we do 32 outstanding I.O.s onto the device. So if you are doing one VM which is doing sequential workload, one which is doing random, we would keep some amount of outstanding IOs, and the arrays have capability to figure this out, and they would do sequential IOs in a batch, and overall it would lead to higher performance. But one thing that we do see as the second part, in VMware environments or virtual environments, there is this big problem which is called IO blender. Once you put 20 VMs on a particular LAN, and you see IOs coming on from all these 20 VMs, the stream on the device is pretty much random. So we just let the array squeeze out extra efficiency, whatever it can squeeze out based on that sequential run, but there isn't much to squeeze out in some cases.
Thanks.
We'll take additional questions offline. Let's thank our speaker.